What did he say about us in warehouses?
That was a big long subject line. These four should actually change the outlook. Okay. You had no, okay.
Okay, I have Ross Burge and Joe Maroney come up to the table, please. So as you recall, we had a series of motions at the last meeting directing Hans and the science panel and the stakeholder technical group to go off and do some more work on PHBs. And so I've invited Hans to bring the board an update. And so if you would do that, I appreciate it.
You have to. Thank you, Chair Burnett, members of the board. My name is Hans Burge. I'm the Adaptive Management Program Administrator.
And I'm Joe Maroney. I'm Director of Fisheries and Water Resources for the Calhoun County.
Joe also is a member of our PHB Science panel.
And I'm basically here to answer if there's any questions once Hans gives this presentation.
Okay, so I just wanted to back up a little bit and talk about how we arrived where we are. You will recall in May of 2017, the board directed myself to work with a technical group and as well as technical stakeholder group to develop criteria that could be used for the PHB in the fish habitat assessment methodology that we talked about yesterday. And we worked together on that in the summer. It was a bit rushed. It was a challenge for everybody involved. We produced a report for the board in August. We discussed that report at length at the August board meeting. And the board ultimately decided to postpone the decision on the PHB criteria in lieu of providing some additional data, some representative data sets from Eastern Washington that were missing, more time to do outreach with stakeholders, and more time for the board, frankly, to review the report as well and have conversations about the implications at the board meeting that were maybe a little more gelled, I guess, just because of the rushed nature. So what we've done, since August is we've looked at the science panel has talked about ways to meet all of the objectives in the board motion. It was passed in August, which talked about continuing to use to look at the criteria the policy recommended to be looked at, barriers, the size of streams, and changes in gradient, and as well as other factors that may be important for PHBs. In looking at the data sets that were available, in looking at literature, the science panel largely agreed with those recommendations from policy, subsequently approved by the board, to look at those criteria as a good starting place from which to base potential habitat rates. So that is, in fact, what has continued to be done since the August board meeting. And one of the ways that we approached the other issues that were brought up at the board meeting about representative data sets and a sample across ecoregions is we stratified by ecoregions. There are 9 ecoregions in the state of Washington. There are 5 on the east side and 4 on the west side. And we sampled watertight monds within each one of those. We looked at different analysis or analytical techniques that would be necessary to try to come up with sample sizes. I don't want to get into a lot of detail specifically here, but there are some challenges when estimating sample size without having a primary data set. And so we had to construct some curves and to look at some things. And while we were doing that, We investigated our own data set to try to use as a pilot data set to estimate what we would need in order to be able to describe some of the PHB criteria. We saw some challenges and maybe some mistakes that we had made early on with some of our early analysis. Not that the criteria specifically were incorrect, it's just that the way that we did the analysis was not the best way to do it. We've identified that, we're moving forward and continuing to work on criteria. But the first thing that we did after we stratified by ecoregion is we randomly selected all of the points, the FN break points within each ecoregion, and using a random numbers generator, we produced a sequence in random order of 1 through, let's say, infinity, even though we know it's not infinity, 153 for the Blue Mountains, for example, and then determined how many sites we would need within each one of those ecoregions in order to have a detectable, in order to capture the variance that exists there and try to understand what a mean value would really represent. And so what we determined is by ecoregion, based on Olympic Peninsula data that we used, that was provided in July as our basis, assuming that equal variances would show up, we had a target sample size of somewhere between 60 and 100 to have confidence in what it was, what the data were going to represent. It depended on if it was a barrier, and it depended on if it was gradient or size. But that was a rough estimate. Somewhere between 60 and 100 was going to be necessary, at minimum on 60, in the worst case of variance, maybe more like 100. So that was our target.
And that's per ecoregion?
Per ecoregion, that's right. Or whatever the strata are in which you're trying to detect a difference. That was our target based on the sample size that we had, which was a nice place to be, having access to that data to even construct those numbers. So that was what we did. And we started with Eastern Washington because that was the place where we had the missing data. And like I talked to you all about in August about the central limit theorem, with what we had been provided in terms of the data set, it seemed like we had west side data. There were some issues if it was perfect or not perfect or whatever, but casting that part aside, we at least had something. We didn't have anything for Eastern Washington. And so we really knew that was the steepest hill that we needed to overcome. So we focused on Eastern Washington. And I can report some of the details there, where we are, but just before I get started, in the Blue Mountains region, I'm just going to pick one of the ecoregions, it's the southeast corner of the state of Washington, there were 153 FN break water type mods that had been, or 153 points, that were FN breaks that had been typed. Of those, there's not that many modifications because often one modification form will have multiple breaks in it. So we randomly select the points. Then we pull up the mod, the water type mod that corresponds to the point. We go through the modification form to find the data for that specific point. And then we determine if it has what we need. So we have to go through the entire form to get to that. Then on top of that, we have to find the data specifically. It has to be specifically tied to the point. Can't be generalized. So because we won't really know if that's whether or not it's correct with a random sample. Now, in the case of the Blue Mountains, we only had 153 to do, and the person that was working on that was at about 40, number 40, before she had one that we could use. And so we made the decision, we're gonna have to do them all. And so she did all of the Blue Mountains, all 153, complete census, which we had hoped to do a subsample, but we didn't have that luxury. So we did all of those for the Blue Mountains. Then we also were working in the Northern Rockies region, which we're also in right now, and we ended up doing all of those as well. Then we moved to the East Cascades, which is another ecoregion in Eastern Washington. We did all of those as well. So we're running into the problem of having enough data in those forms to be able to describe PHBs. Now, I think that what I just said to you is worth the effort. That knowledge, in my mind, is worth knowing. That's something that's unknowable before that. So I would say It was a worthwhile exercise to go through that. And we're also, so we've gone through those three ecoregions in eastern Washington. There's another one down around the Klickitat River that we're working on. And then also we're working on the west side of the Cascades now. So we've gone through the eastern Washington ecoregions. The last one is the Columbia Basin, which, as you know, doesn't have a lot of forestry in it. So that one sort of falls out. But we're going through methodically through these ecoregions to try to come up with the samples. And I just wanted to give an update of where we are as of last night.
Excuse me, I just wanted to clarify. So you're saying there wasn't enough data in those three ecosystems to do the sampling system that you wanted to do?
To be able to differentiate between ecosystems or ecoregions, level four EPA ecoregions. It doesn't mean that we don't have enough for eastern Washington. It just means that we can't split it up to the grain size that we had hoped to be able to do.
Thank you.
And so it's not a fatal flaw necessarily, but it is if we're trying to distinguish across ecoregions.
So then of those ecoregions that you've gone through already, how many usable data points did you find?
That's exactly right. Thank you all. Board members, okay, so I'm gonna walk through some information for you. For eastern Washington to date, there have been 1,502 assigned points to the folks that are working on this, which includes about five people from DNR, two interns from the University of Washington. We've reached out to stakeholders representing really all the caucuses at this point. And so it's a big effort where everyone is pitching in. So I would just say thank you to your caucus representatives for pitching in and helping with this, because I think when we were here in August, the landowners appreciated this effort because they went through this effort. But many of the other caucuses in the program hadn't been through that level of effort, and I think now everyone has a full appreciation for how challenging this work is. So I just wanted to express my gratitude for that. And given our timeline, there was no real option, I think, in here. So having people pitching in is really helpful. So I wanted to I'll walk through eastern Washington first, because that was one of the biggest areas where we had some challenges. So we've assigned 1,502 points to date. 1,268 of those have been completed. So there's a couple of hundred more to go. For points that we're able to use, where there are data on size, barriers, or gradient, we have 230 good points. So that's a good sample. Now again, I want to just highlight, we're not going to be able to differentiate all those ecoregions. If we're lucky, we may be able to differentiate Northern Rockies from East Cascades, but for Blue Mountains, for example, there's no possibility there. And so that's where we are. Out of the 1,268, we have roughly 230 that are usable. So whatever that is, about 8% or something like that. About 16% roughly. Then on Western Washington, we've assigned 2,000 points to be done. And we're just really starting there, randomly selected points. And we've completed 228 of those, and 63 of those 228 are good. So we're looking at, you know, almost 20%. So it's considerably better in Western Washington in terms of data. And one of the things that I just wanted to talk about a bit is we're looking across a time series that was some of our earliest ones were, you know, like 2005, 2006, something like that. And so it's not that those points are wrong. It's just that we're asking something different of the forms, the information. We're looking at a different purpose. And where that purpose is just happens to be coincident that we can use it, we're lucky. But I don't mean to say that there's some kind of an accuracy error rate or anything like that associated with those mods, even the ones that are 20 years old. We don't have any reason to think that they're wrong, or 15 years old, that they're wrong, or that there are problems with them. It's just that the forms didn't require the same data set, or that in the narratives, that information wasn't provided a lot of times we have to go into the narratives. And we've talked to some people that do a lot of the water timing for the industrial forest landowners and others. Two individuals have done over 11,000 of roughly 28,000 total forms. And so it's pretty important that we talk to them about it. And they offered some advice on why that may be, and we will bring that information to the board in our report. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about what we're doing moving forward. As you know, the other part of this was a study design to do the validation evaluation.
Before you go there, can you remind the board, I know Joe has provided two updates to the board, but in the first update, you gave us a schedule. And so can you talk about where we are in the schedule, whether we're on track to deliver to the board in January, and all that kind of stuff, please?
We're on schedule.
Can you remind the board of
what the schedule is? I actually have the schedule that I was going to get to, but I'll jump real quickly. So on November 14th, there's a meeting with the science panel and the stakeholders, face-to-face meeting. It's always a challenge in getting a bunch of folks together to meet on a date that's going to work. Because we didn't have that, we did some communication and outreach in between meetings to just let people know where we were. We received some feedback that was really helpful. But on the 14th, we're going to have an opportunity to really get into the details of where we are status-wise for both the study design and the PHB criteria with the stakeholders. The data mining is scheduled to end on the 15th of November, and then there's going to be QAQC. That's going to happen quickly. There's going to be a report written. On December 8th, the draft report is going to be submitted to the stakeholder representatives. And I would just caution members in caucuses and board members that it's really best to stay out of that and let the technical people work with the science panel. Don't jump to conclusions. That's not a final product for the board. I'd rather have you wait until you get the final product, the approved product. But that's an iterative step. There will be a draft. And then we're going to meet on December 14th to go over the results of the draft. So we're going to send it out to caucus representatives, technical representatives from caucuses. Can't stress that T word enough. To talk about the details in the report and really get a thorough understanding and to some degree of vetting, see what we're missing. We've had conversations if there were things that maybe we weren't considering that would be important to talk about. We've asked for some of those or different perspectives. And people have been very good about sharing perspectives and concerns, some of which are germane to this topic. Others are really more focused on what the study is going to do to really give us a more thorough answer with data that would be designed for that purpose.
And then the evaluation study?
Yes. Okay. And then on January 16th, that's the day after Martin Luther King Day, the report will go to the board. So you'll see it. Your meeting is on February 14th, almost an entire month before the meeting. And the intent there is, if there's any other discussion or consideration, evaluation, vetting in your caucus, anything like that, you should have, you'll have as much time as we can provide. And we're really going to stick to that schedule to make sure you get it then. So that's the PHB criteria piece. We are on schedule to meet that deadline. Now, for the study design, everything comes at a cost. With this effort on the PHB piece, we're making progress on the study design, but what we're going to provide to the board is a peer-reviewed study design, which means we're going to, our independent science peer review process that the Active Management Program has, a blind peer review process to make sure that the study design meets the rigors to be acceptable in the scientific community of people completely removed and outside of our process. And so because of that peer review process, there are some unknowns in terms of timing and deadlines. We're confident that we can meet the May board meeting without too much trouble with the study design piece, but we're not going to meet the February deadline in terms of a companion PHB criteria with a peer review study. If it wasn't going to be peer reviewed, sure, but we think it's more important to make sure that this study is ready to go. So when it comes into the adaptive management program through CEMA, presumably, that we can really just keep the momentum moving and work on the project and get the answers to these really important questions. And one of the other pieces from the study design, I just want to throw this out, is we're looking at a four-year study. The first year could start in 2018, and it would be a pilot year to make sure that we get what we need to correctly. And then we're talking about sampling 50 sites from each of the 8 ecoregions, excluding the Columbia. So we'd have a total sample size of 400 sites across the ecoregions. And if we can pool after the fact, if we have east versus west, or north versus south, or southeast to northeast, I don't know, however that may work out to aggregate, we can always do that later. We felt like making sure that we had a representative sample is going to be really important. There are 3 components of the study design. That's one of them is getting PHB criteria really nailed down. Second one is looking at different survey teams to get at the repeatability issue, to make sure that what we come up with criteria don't just work in the halls of science, but they work on the ground in the field, and that it's going to be repeatable across crews. So that's going to be a component of this. The other component is going to be revisiting sites where the uppermost fish has been monumented, you know, after 10 years, to go back and see if those points change. I think that's an important component to this. So all 3 of those pieces will be nested into that study design. And they'll be broken out by cost, and so you'll have a sense of where they are. I think in the conversations that we've had in the science panel, we feel that those 3 pieces are really necessary to get a complete picture about water typing, water typing. How's what I generally can add, Joe?
And yeah, Mr. Chair, I think the only thing to add on that is when we were talking about this in the science panel, is that very first year not going all in, but kind of going in it with a smaller scale of sample sizes across the various ecoregions to, you know, are we collecting the correct information? And I think we're also looking at it as collecting as much information that first year, and then when we dive in it, you know, some of those variables that we, you know, we may not need, but it's a lot better to throw those out rather than get into years 2, 3, or 4 and say, wow, I wish we kind of would have collected that information. And one of the things also to add is, I think at every meeting, Hans always reminds us, you know, the motion by the board of, you know, what direction of what was given to the science panel. So, I mean, we take that to heart, and I think that we, you know, at least talk about that for the first couple of minutes so we don't get derailed.
Okay, thank you. I mean, one of the things I wanted to mention to the board members is one of the commitments we made at the last board meeting was to make sure we're over communicating with everybody. And so they've had 2 meetings with stakeholder technical folks, one of which was a group meeting, one which they couldn't get a date on the calendar, so there were individual meetings. The third one is coming up next week.
We've had 2 individual meetings with each caucus and 1 in person. And then the 4th meeting, the 2nd in person meeting, is coming up for you.
And I've had Joe give you a couple of updates. I've made myself available to meet with many of the board members to make sure everybody is tracking what's going on and that we're not missing anything. So I appreciate people letting either Hans or myself know. If you need more information, please let us know, and we're happy to meet with you. Questions from the board about what's been presented today?
Yeah, I have a question. I remain skeptical about the timeline here. I understand you've had the meeting with the technical folks in the caucuses. How many times has the science panel itself met since our last board meeting?
Three or four times.
Three or four times?
Yeah.
And then are, the timeframe that you laid out where the drafts, the various drafts would come out, both for the PHP and for the study, how long is the science panel going to have to analyze that? You said we would have about a month, but is that going to be a finished product through the, I'm more concerned with what the science panel thinks about this than anybody else.
Great question, Board Member Nelson. The report is probably over 80% what we gave you before. Most of that is going to still apply. Now we're going to be working on the data analysis piece. There could be some changes. We're going to work harder on the language to make it a little more clear and a little more easily understood on what some of the tables mean and some descriptions. We're going to spend a little more time on that and the explanation. But for the most part, the report is largely done. The analysis is also mostly canned at this point because we had that data set to work with. And so we've worked out routines to streamline that. That, and we're not waiting on that. That's there's still movement on that. And there has been movement on that to improve or to look at additional ways to analyze the data. So I don't mean to say that nothing is happening in between those meetings, because there's a lot of that happens between those meetings. When we have the final QA/QC data, it's in a format that's very similar to the one that landowners provided before. And so we already know how to use that information and how to do that analysis. And so that's why the analysis this time around is going to be a lot more streamlined and a lot faster. And the report, you're going to see a lot of the same sentences. A lot of it is going to be the same, because we felt like it was done the right way the first time. So we don't expect to make those wholesale changes.
Mr. Chairman Nelson, we have a meeting on November 28th, and which is going to be a couple of weeks after, you know, when all the analysis gets done. And I think from the science panel perspective, we are, we know that that's going to be a tough meeting, a long meeting, to kind of go over what the data analysis says and then kind of where we go from there on how it's being structured. So, and I think we have a commitment from all of them that, you know, it's in, you know, most of these meetings have been in person. And so we know that the 28th is going to be in person. I'll be there. And basically, it's kind of roll up your sleeves, and we know it's going to be a long day to talk about those issues. Because we do recognize the constraints given the time schedule. And, you know, and I had said that, you know, during the first deadline about the time schedule. And so, you know, given a little bit more time, yes, it's going to be better. And I think the science panel is committed to get that product done.
I appreciate the answer, and don't, you know, don't misunderstand my skepticism. It's just been my experience that you're talking about the middle of November through Christmas to the first of the year, and whether you're talking about government or private enterprise, a lot doesn't get done over that time frame around Christmas. So, thank you.
Board members,
so a couple questions, and one, I'm wondering if you guys can talk a little bit more about the QA/QC process, just in general, and then just the way you were laying out the timeline and the QA/QC coming after you sort of got all of the points extracted. I'm wondering if that QA/QC process applied to a standard process as you were extracting the data points. So that's my first question. Then I reserve the right to ask one more before the microphone goes.
Happy to do so.
Okay.
In the stats that I presented, the 230 of 1268 that were good, that's because we do QA/QC continuously. And what we're not looking at individuals, but we're tracking the data that are extracted, and then we're going back through the ones that they've identified as good, those that they've flagged saying there's something here but it's not clear, and then those that are bad, we go back to 5% of those randomly, and we just check. And if we, and we had one person that was really making a lot of progress, and it was a bit of a head scratcher because everyone else is about the same pace, and so we dove into his a little more and found one minor tweak. And if we wouldn't have done that, and we got to the end, we couldn't have used all of that information that was being generated. And so we've had to do this continually to make sure that what we had was in fact useful. Otherwise, we'd get to the end and we could potentially not know what we have or throw it all out. So that's, and we're being a little, we're being a bit strict. The flagging could be, it appears that you know, the gradient measurement, for example, is downstream of the feature, but we're not sure if it's downstream of where the last fish was found, or between where the last fish was found in the break, versus what was upstream. And so we can't say that it's in fact a difference of measured at the break, or if it's measured below the last fish. And those kinds of things are a case where there's useful information there. There definitely is useful information there. But because we don't have that specificity, we're not gonna throw it into our good camp yet. If we get to the point where we had the luxury of looking back on this, and maybe we'll be there after we can look at these criteria to more inform the study design, then we might look at some of those and say, well, how could we have collected this data set to be useful for what we're doing? And also the plan, one of the places where the 20% that are gonna change in the report, I'd say only about 5% of that's related to data. The other 15 is really about educating you all and about this process, because we're learning a lot about these forms. We're learning a lot about the current system, good and bad. And so we want to make sure that as we're moving forward with the rule, that we don't miss that opportunity, that teaching moment, to share that information that we're learning. And so that's where the report is going to have some additional, you know, ideas for moving forward. And you probably won't get anything that many of you haven't heard, but we're going to have a way to describe it after looking at it specifically, which really hasn't been done today. So we'll be able to make some informed recommendations based on experience and actual looking at the forms.
So my second question has to do with the report. I appreciate your question, Board Member Nelson. I was wondering about that as well, and your answer. But I remember one feature of that report being the science team had landed on one particular recommendation, but then there was a table from which we could construct other options. I'm wondering if you are planning to, or if you could, rather than that format, have sort of more of a discussion of what the trade-offs on some different options might be. Rather than just saying, here's the one that we think is best, you could do it, and the table was implied, you could do it this way too, but it was, we couldn't really pull out with a lot more discussion about like, really how to use that table to construct other options and what the trade-offs would be.
If you recall, in August, you made the same statement, and I haven't lost it. That's exactly what I was getting at in the answer to Board Member Nelson's comment, which is where we're going to do a better job explaining and discussing some of those things, instead of just, here's the table, this is wonderful. And if you had had all the conversations we had had, you'd know exactly what it meant. We're going to describe that. We're going to spend some time to make sure that the explanations are more clear and precise.
Thank you for your recommendation. Happy birthday in between now and next.
Can you talk about how we're going to make this data transparent to the public?
As soon as the data are QAQC'd with our final QAQC, and we have a meeting on the 20th with the science panel, and I'm hoping at the conclusion of that meeting on the 20th, we're going to be able to have a final data set in QAQC with all the details of the flags. There are comments that I think are important about some of those flags as well, and we'll make that available publicly. So everyone has the same data set that we use to base our decision. And it won't be in a PDF. We'll make sure that it's a usable format if people want to go and do some additional analysis or look at it a different way. We'll make sure that it's available for everyone to be able to do that.
So can I assume that, I know Joe will say yes, but meaning the other Joe. that in November's update to the board, we'll see a website or something that people can link to access that data if they so choose.
Joe's nodding. He's saying yes. We will have the information available, and so it'll just be where it goes. So it seems like that should be straightforward. Okay, seems like it should be.
Barring technical details, right? So I mean, that was part of the.
Absolutely.
The commitment we made is we wanted to make sure people actually got to look at the data that's been used and how it's been selected and all of that.
And part of the reason for that month is in fact because there are other things that occur between, you know, December 8th and January 16th, or excuse me, December 14th and January 16th. And so it was to make sure that we would have adequate time, and that there would be part of the other piece is if there are comments that are brought up and discussed in that meeting, and there's additional work or additional analysis, that table in the first report was a perfect example. We had a meeting with stakeholders. I know it wasn't to everyone's satisfaction, but there were a number of things that were brought up that changed the way that changed the scenarios in that table. So we tried to be responsive. And this is a case where we can do that in a way that hopefully we'll have at least some time to get back to the person that made the comment so they can see what we did in response to their comment. That's part of this, is to make sure that we have time to make the changes, but also to have at least, you know, some offline conversations with the people that made the comments to make sure that we really got the essence of what was being proposed.
Other board member questions for folks in front of us? Anything else? Thank you, guys. Appreciate you giving us the update. Okay, so I would suggest, since it's not lunch yet, we move on to, and Ponce, would you come up for this too, please? Can you give us an update on what's going on with the board subcommittee? Lisa, of course, is here as well, and maybe between the two of us, two of you, you can provide the board an update on AMP improvements and the facilitator process.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Again, my name is Hans Burge. I'm the Adaptive Management Program Administrator. And I'm here to discuss the board subcommittee's work on efficiency and effectiveness improvements for the Adaptive Management Program. We're fortunate that in attendance are four and myself, five of the people that are part of this subcommittee. So there's five of the board members, then myself and Jeff Davis. So if there are any other things that you have to add to the conversation, please do so. The subcommittee, if you recall, in August presented a proposal to the board to adopt a scope of work for the contract that was going to be sent out in a request for proposals. The request for proposals that the board approved for the scope of work was turned into a request for proposal, rather. That request for proposal went out. It closed about, a week and a half ago. And we are moving forward with a interview team, which includes myself, someone from Fish and Wildlife, we're hoping, if it's not Jeff, maybe somebody else, and then board members Janicki and Swardine to do an initial review of the proposals and to make some recommendations on contractors to be interviewed and have references checked for, and then that recommendation would come to the subcommittee that's working on the process, which includes board members Davies, board member Herrera, and Chair Bernath. And then that would there would be some vetting, and then that would come to the board.
Board member Jack.
Thank you, Chair Benath. Hans, I do appreciate being involved in the process. The RFPs that have come in, I have not gone through all of them, but have started reading through them, and I was pleasantly surprised at the level of expertise that the different consultants bring to the table. I actually think we're going to have a harder decision than I thought about, you know, a facilitator. And I think the magic in all this, I'm really happy to work with Paula on this process, because I think there is going to be a certain level of magic, like, I don't know, finding the right set of skills and background on, you know, which consultant can work best with all the different caucuses. And I think that really will be the middle ground that we have to thread. And I think we have really good options just from my initial look at four of the, is it 11 or 12?
11.
11 proposals that came in. So we have a schedule to move forward. I believe we're going to get back together the Wednesday right before Thanksgiving, and then hopefully in early first week of December be able to interview and let the proposed consultant go through the DNR process for contract review. So, yeah.
Thank you. Any questions from the board members or Brad on this?
I'm sorry, how long is the contract
going to be for? Scoped it out for end of the biennium at this point.
We anticipate three meetings. The first meeting was focused on the recommitment and reinvigoration of the adaptment of TFW process principles. The second one was largely going to be a check-in on how that's going and if there were some course corrections. And then the third one was reserved for potentially things that may be related to budget requests or places for cooperation and communication to take place along those lines. Those were the broad, big picture deliverables.
And the consultant, whoever is selected, will be doing a tremendous amount of background work at first, potentially interviewing many people from many of the caucuses. And so, you know, whether we hold to exactly what he just said or not will be dictated by
those conversations,
concerns and conversations that come out of the process.
The minimum number that we were looking at was 15. So that gives you for interviews, in addition to background, other networks. There's a lot of work that's going to be necessary to get to the point where the meeting can take place to be effective.
I have another question. What will this subcommittee continue as an oversight of this contract and the agendas that come out of it, or what's the plan?
Good question. We haven't thought that through.
Well, get on it.
I don't know, maybe my fellow subcommittee members would like to address that if she's had any opinions. But we have talked about it in the committee, right?
I'm certainly prepared to carry on with that work. I think our initial job was to find a facilitator, but then, you know, to take that and be able to distill it to a digestible and something that the board can take action on. I'm prepared to serve on that committee for a longer period of time than just picking a facilitator.
Yeah, my sense of the work that we undertook was that, you know, getting the principals meeting was like a foundational piece of work to set the good stage for being able to address a number of others of the issues that have been raised on the list, the stuff that we've heard from the letters that we've gotten from Ray. And so, I mean, I guess I view it as we'll hear a lot more and then you get ideas through the process of the facility to come up with, but then we have to do something with it. We've gotta synthesize all of that and with the work that we've done prior, identifying sort of the easier things to do, the harder things to do. Kind of put that all together and come up with a plan, so.
Yeah, just a reminder, remember Hans brought us Easy Bucket, Less Easy Bucket, Hard Bucket. And, you know, we tried to take on the easy stuff at the last meeting and felt that we really need to have this facilitated process to take on the rest of it, because a lot of it is about context and revitalization of TFW and all of that, so.
If I could add one point, in the RFP, it specifically states that the subcommittee will oversee the facilitator, and that the facilitator will bring things to the subcommittee before going out to principals. There is going to be some oversight by the subcommittee, and we talked about that with all of them.
Yeah, my concern is board meetings just don't happen frequently enough, and yeah, so that's good to hear. Permanent subcommittee.
Okay, any other questions or comments from board members on this topic? Okay.
Thank you, Hans.
Thank you, Hans. So the question is, would board members like to entertain an order to lunch? Do the public comment here. So why don't we do this? Let's go ahead and break for lunch and then plan on being back here by 12:30. And everybody's on their own.
Oh, except the candy
Oh, really?
They're buckets.
What's that?
You should be served and out in 1 hour.